So I'm here in outside Ballyconnell, and I'm talking to Jack Fadden. Jack, could I start by asking you about your own background and where you came from?
Well, I come from a little place called Ballyheen, Castlebar, in the County Mayo, where I was born, reared and educated.
And as soon as you finished with your education and school, you went into the Garda Force, is that right?
No.
Okay,
no,
sorry.
I was a clerk for a few years after I did my leaving cert in the late 50s with the Castlebar Baking Company. And then I applied for and joined the Guards in December 59.
And where were you first stationed?
I was first stationed here, right here in Ballyconnell.
In what year?
May 1960. Long time ago.
My goodness, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for how many years then were you stationed here in Ballyconnell?
Well, I was here for about 2.5 years. And if you remember the first border campaign, the 1956-62 finished in May 62. And then all of a sudden there was a pile of young guards transferred all over the country. And I was one of them. I was transferred down to County Clare, where I served for a period in Kilrush and in Enniskillen. I was a patrol car driver in both of those places.
I see. So, in fact, you were only here 2.5 years when you were transferred down the country.
Yeah, when the border campaign finished, as I said, in 62.
Yeah. And so why were members of the Garda Force transferred down the country at that time?
Because there was so many on the border, whatever we were supposed to be doing, preserving the border and keeping people from being involved in nefarious activities. And it was nothing like the latter campaign, but nevertheless it was taken very seriously.
And so your duties at that time were what exactly were they?
Mostly checkpoints and surveying the country and checking on vacant houses and that kind of thing.
And in that first campaign, did you uncover anything interesting in your time?
Not in that campaign, no, nothing really. Nothing big happened. Something, there had been a few activities in this area before I came here in the 50s. I think it started in 56. And there were some people of note arrested in this area.
I see. And so did that create a bit of tension at that time? And can you recall, was there a dislike for the kind of work you were doing at the time?
Well, maybe with a minority of people, but mainly the guards were very well accepted and supported by the local people.
Mm. And how did you fare out with your neighbouring police force? Was there a kind of a cross-border goodwill between?
Well, there may be goodwill, but for contact, there was practically nil. The roads were spiked at that time, Morris, and there was very few places that you could get through with the car. You had to go to Swanland Bar. At that time, there was customs on both sides, and you had to have a book from the people in our jurisdiction, which you had to get stamped in and out. And you had paper work too for the people on the other side, for the Northern Ireland people.
Was there much traffic on the roads in those days?
Not really. But if you wanted to go to Fermanagh from this hinterland, Ballyconnell, Swanland Bar, Belturbet, you'd either go through Swanland Bar with a car or whooped Clonus. That's
a
long way apart.
It's a long way around.
Yeah. Big steel spikes on the border road down below Ballyconnell. And all you could get through with there was a bicycle. And there was a local man right beside the border on this side of it who had a hackney car. And he did a huge business because the people, boys and girls coming to the dances in Ballyconnell, would cycle up to the border and he would take them up in the car for a half a crown.
It's
all money. It was great value. And they came in the droves.
So he made a good living out of that. Yeah.
He did, surely.
And the spiking of the roads, that was carried out by the police for, or by the security forces on the board, on the Fermanagh side.
And well, the top contractors, but they supervised it, and it was at their behest and agreement.
Yeah. So, did you return again as soon as?
Yeah, I was stationed in a whole lot of places along the border. I was in the Cabin Monaghan division. And I subsequently came back from Clare to Castleblaney in County Monaghan, where I served for three years, 63 to 65. And in that period, I got married to a lovely girl, God rest her soul, from Derry Lane in Fermanagh, where she taught school for 40 years subsequently.
And what was her maiden name?
Mary Watterson. She's from Timor, Derry Lane. And
Watterson, was that Catholic or Protestant?
Oh, Catholic.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It has.
Yeah. There were both. There were Watersons, Protestants, and Watersons, Catholics.
Yeah.
And they spelled their different. Spelled their names a little different. They put two T's in the Protestant people, whereas the Catholics put one T.
But you, my goodness, though, you really witnessed an awful lot in your time. In the Garda Force, so along the border there, it must have been.
Yeah.
The Monaghan Fermanagh border was fairly rough at times.
Very, very. I was stationed in Clonus for a few years, and that was the worst of the whole lot, because there's a road from Cavan to Clonus, and you go in and out through the north, and that wasn't, they didn't have the steel barriers on that. For some reason, you could travel through it. And we had to go to part of that particular area. We had to go through the north to get to our part, to our jurisdiction, to set up checkpoints.
Because it was going in and out, wasn't it?
In and out, yeah.
And there was a kind of a no man's land there.
Yeah,
in places.
Yeah, yeah. They call it the Drumolly Peninsula. Yeah.
And... Were you confronted at any stage, or did you have to protect yourself at any time?
Oh, we did, yeah. That happened to me a few times. And luckily that I came out safe. Unfortunately, on the 8th of June 72, I was a young sergeant in Clonus, and I was called to go to Leggy Kelly, where there was an alleged bomb in the centre of the road, the main road between Cavan and Clonus. And I went there, and there was an inspector from Cavan arrived just as I arrived, at a couple of guards from Clonus, and some guards came from Cavan and Monaghan, and there was two sergeants, myself and a sergeant Lynham. And as the day went on, we were searching the area in general. The inspector discovered that the bomb, or alleged bomb, on the main road was a dud, that there was nothing to it. But I subsequently found a box on a little back road called the Drumbahna Lane between Red Hills and Leggy Kelly, really. And the inspector and a young army officer went over to it, and I was with them. He went on more briskly in front of me, and I noticed he was looking at the box. There was wires in it, and the next thing, bang. He was blown up over the trees and slammed down into the road.
My God.
And I ran over to him, and he was in bits. I went immediately for medical and spiritual aid, and he was taken into Cavan Surgical Hospital, where he died that night at sometime after 11 o'clock. May God rest his lovely soul.
And so were you, you were so close to it. And who's responsible for this bomb?
Oh, well, it's obviously people that we would describe as terrorists.
I mean, what did that do to you? How did you feel about that?
I was
Were you angry?
Yes, I was, of course. I was injured. Physically and psychologically. It left me a very poor sleeper for a long time. and maybe perhaps the stay has affected me. I had worse years from superficial injuries, but I was very lucky because a young army officer, at the moment the bomb went off, walked between me and the actual bomb. And both he and the inspector took the main brunt of it, and all the shrapnel that came from it. I was lucky that I wasn't more seriously injured.
My God. And so experiencing something like that then, did you continue in the Garda Force?
Absolutely.
You just continued your work and as...
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
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 And so from that hotspot of activity at the time, were you transferred directly afterwards out of that, or were you still there, or were you stationed?
Well, shortly after I left there, about a year later, and I was sent to Ballyconnell as the station sergeant in Ballyconnell, where I operated from then until I retired in 1995.
And in Ballyconnell, was it a quieter place to be?
Than Clonus. Oh, much, much quieter than Clonus. Clonus, I remember one night, we'd be getting reports every night about irregular checkpoints on that area that I talked to you about, the Drumolly Peninsula. And on one side of it, there was IRA, and on the other side, there was UVF.
And
performing irregular checkpoints. That's right.
And what were the guards doing?
Well, you couldn't get very well into this Drumolly Peninsula because you had to go through Northern Ireland to get to it.
And what were the UDR doing about this?
Very little. They didn't come out to the hotspots when things were happening.
And did that leave them fight it out between themselves and you as a...
Well, that's what you would be hoping would happen, but it never seemed to happen. You know.
You had innocent victims along the way.
Yeah. Oh, they just wanted to show the power in setting up those legal checkpoints. They'd be very brief, but it was just to show strength or power or whatever they believed in. But it didn't do any good for anybody, only left a bad taste in the mouth for the local people on both sides.
What about the people couldn't be possibly living a normal life with this kind of environment and this way of expecting something to happen at any moment?
Absolutely not. And some awful things did happen. Just across the border from Clonus, I remember one evening where two farmers were butchered, bayoneted in a farmyard.
Oh, that was the man Murray murder, was it?
Nan and Murray. Yeah, you have it right. A man subsequently walked into a police station in England and admitted that he was involved in it as a member of the British Army.
And
I don't know what subsequently happened. But I remember reading that.
But before that man went into a police station in England, the people were afraid that it was a local involvement, and there was it calmed down. It actually the fighting stopped for a while.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they believed it was local involvement, but. All the indications would suggest to a trained eye that it wasn't local.
Yeah.
It was bayonets involved.
And so so continuing with your work, it mustn't have been easy. But here in Ballyconnell then, there was activity as well, and there was support for the IRA.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, that continued. And
did you have to turn a blind eye to that?
No, we didn't turn a blind eye, most certainly not. Wherever we found activity or something that we could substantiate with evidence, those people were taken before the Special Criminal Court. And I give evidence there many times.
And in doing so, did you feel that you were putting your own life at risk?
Well, you always knew that it was dangerous stuff, but that was your job. That's what you were paid to do. That's what you took on. And I did it to the best of my ability.
I spoke to George Morrissey, and he told me how badly, brutally murdered his brother was.
Yeah.
So there was always a danger.
A man I knew very well, man of honour, first class member of the Guards, a man that did his job in a professional manner without fear or favour, and that would take on any situation, cost him his life. But nevertheless, he was a noble man.
And so you had a very strong divide during the years of the Troubles. And was it easy to keep in the middle without getting drawn into it? In other words, you know, you had a very strong support, as I said, for the Unionists on one side and then the Catholics on the other side.
Yeah.
Was it hard to keep away from that? Or?
Not really. No, no. The Guards were fair-minded people who did their job in a fair manner. Yeah. And people of both situations realised that and appreciated that. And we never had any problem with conflicts of interest because we did it in according to the oath we swore without fear or favour.
And so your colleagues in the force here in Ballyconnell, it was a quieter place, but there was movement of subversives back and forth over the border all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Was there anything done to try and stop them?
Well, in Ballyconnell, we had a permanent checkpoint right outside the Garda station for about maybe 15 years, 24 hours a day. And nothing would get through without being checked. And if there was any mention or any indication of serious activity, we would have those checkpoints backed up by the army. And
were the army very active at that time? Were they brought in
great
numbers?
Well, they were. They had a military base in Ballyconnell, and then their main barracks was in Longford, where we could get a number of people at any given time without any problem if they were needed.
And did the sorry now for asking this, but did the danger seem to be more from this side than the other side?
Oh, absolutely, because we didn't have many of the other side around Ballyconnell. You'd have to go deep into the north to locate those, and it was a different area from Clonus, as I mentioned to you already, where the border went in and out and meandered everywhere.
That's right. And you mentioned a third place where you were stationed. You said Clonus, Ballyconnell, and
Castle Blaney.
What was Castle Blaney like?
Castle Blaney was tough, but it was more ordinary police work. And it was a kind of an area very near the Armagh border, Cady and Armagh, and Cross McGlynn from another point, and those towns. And the activity at that time from that area mostly would be to do with smuggling. So it wasn't serious crime. And there were lots of customs people in the area to deal with that. And there was a lot of that kind of activity in that area at that time. But as the European Union, we joined it, and that did away with a lot of the smuggling, I think, when prices became more reconciled to each other.
Hmm.
Yeah.
The Good Friday Agreement, having one of the agreements was releasing the prisoners. Was that something that you agreed with?
Well, anything that would bring substantial peace. A lot of things mightn't be too acceptable to a lot of us, but if it brought peace, which it obviously did, and stopped the killing, well, my opinion is that you would have to go out on a limb to accommodate that to an extent. And I think that was accepted by all sides, more or less.
Mm-hmm. And did you find that directly after that, that things did actually quieten down and, you know, it did work?
Oh, absolutely. It's obvious to everybody that there is no killing since by the subversives on either side, which is wonderful.
And the gunfire over some of the Protestant farming community over their houses, they some of them have said to me that this was what was happening, and it was a kind of ethnic cleansing and trying to push the border back. Did you ever get complaints like that or people coming into?
No, I honestly didn't. Mm. No. Both sides of the religious divide seem to get on very well in this area, and we never had any problems like that, thank God.
Mm-hmm. And these shots that are fired sometimes to frighten people, were they deliberately fired to frighten the people living in the houses?
Not really. It was kind of to show that the local people that we were dealing with, that they were still there and there was still a force to be reckoned with. They might go and fire a few shots from up on the side of a mountain down at the border, down at the British Army checkpoint. And nobody ever seemed to get hurt or killed from that activity. It was kind of more to show their own people that they were still in action and like to cover their own tracks.
Mm-hmm. How good was intelligence with the guards locally?
I can say for a fact that in this area it was 100% accurate and on the ball.
And of course you had the brutal murder of Sanderson. He was shot in the school locally. That was in your jurisdiction.
In Timor, in County Fermanagh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that happened quite close to here.
Oh, yeah.
In Timor.
The crow flies about 2.5 miles from Ballyconnell.
What happened on that day?
It was at the morning break. He was the headmaster in that local school. Excuse me. And he was just having his morning break, and they came in, and 3 or 4 IRA, allegedly, and shot him dead. He was believed to be a member of the security forces, part-time in Northern Ireland. And that car that was involved in that subsequently crashed through the guard the checkpoint in Ballyconnell at very high speed, where a young guard was on duty. Thank God he wasn't injured. He got out of the way quick enough. And then there was a big manhunt on our side of the border. And subsequently that evening, myself and some more members of the force with the Irish Army found the car that was involved in that incident in the Balmore Garda area. But the people who were involved, the man in charge of that unit, came from the deep south of Ireland, subsequently left the country and was never gotten after that.
And the car, was it burnt out or was it just abandoned?
No, it was just abandoned. Yeah.
And that certainly, that as you say, was only 2.5 miles away. So so having that car come through, were you manning that checkpoint that day? Were you there?
Well, members of my force. I was actually in my office, and I actually saw the car going through the checkpoint, which is only about 20 yards from my office to look at the window.
And so that was going at speed up?
Going at high speed.
So did you know something was going to happen then?
I knew that something obviously had happened.
Oh yes, when it was coming
back. Yeah, when
back
a car
down
went
again.
Through
yes.
the car. Yeah. We hadn't been notified. This was only maybe 3-4 minutes after they had actually shot that teacher.
Yeah.
God rest him.
Let me ask you the question about the time that Pather Neary was arrested for his for making shells for explosives here in Ballyconnell.
Yes.
Did you arrest him?
I didn't actually. I arrested him subsequently when he was being taken before the Special Criminal Court.
And did that cause a lot of trouble afterwards? When he was?
It did, subsequently. It was around the Christmas time that a huge crowd assembled, supporters, I suppose, and hangers-on at the bottom of Ballyconnell town, where they blocked traffic and all that kind of thing, total disruption of the town, and had people terrified, and we subsequently had to have a baton charge on them that night to clear the area and call in support from outlying stations. And subsequently, before it was all over, we had to call in the army. It was getting so dodgy looking. But we cleared the area with the Garda force, and we had a baton charge, and there was people injured and a lot of people arrested and charged. And never afterwards did anything like that happen. People got the message that you can go so far, but no further. And if you cross a certain red line, you will be dealt with very strictly. Law and order must prevail. And it did prevail. And it was the best thing that ever happened in Ballyconnell for the rule of law and order, in my honest opinion.
And that event that took place, and it involved the additional backup from the police force, because you had to draw guards from
Belturbet, Ballinamore, Swanlambar, and everywhere we could get guards, and we got a substantial force eventually.
And was there many of these protesters there at that time?
That night?
That night, yes. Was
there were many? A few hundred. The whole Diamond area blocked, where the road to Swanlambar, to Ballinamore, to Ballyconnell on the border, and, you know, it's crossroads, and the road to Belturbet and Cavan, all were blocked.
Did it get very serious then?
Very serious. Very serious. And it was lucky that there weren't lives lost. When the army had to be called in and took up positions in the main street, that was very serious. Those people are heavily armed, and
somebody could very easily have got shot.
Many people could have got shot dead that night.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of those people realised that after that night, how serious it was. And they never again tried anything like that, because they were dealt with severely and taken before the courts.
Yeah.
And people, I suppose, were injured in the baton charge as well. Yeah. And they realised you can't fool around with the forces of law and order and think that it's a joke, or that you can have mob law in the country. That's not on. That can be tolerated, and it wasn't tolerated.
Yeah. Well, retired Jack Fadden, thank you very much indeed. I appreciate you telling me your story. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
When you were stationed in Dromoly
In Clonus.
Oh, sorry. When you were stationed in Clonus, did you witness any... I'll ask the other question first. When you were stationed in Clonus...
You're not recording now.
Well, I am, yeah. I am now. Okay. So, can I... How will I put the question to you?
When I was stationed in Clonus, you operated in the Tremoli Peninsula.
Okay.
Occasionally, yeah. Or whatever.
Yeah.
It'll be right. Only occasionally.
Okay. Okay. So when you were stationed in Clonus, you were operating sometimes in Tremoli. So what did you uncover there at that time? For example, you were in the north, so were you in uniform?
Yes, I was in uniform, but to get there, I wouldn't be in uniform because we had to go through the north of Ireland, where the border goes in and out as you go from Clonus out to Tremoli. And then we would change back into uniform. And then when we would have to be assisted by the army, they had to come in via Scots House and they had to cross the river. And a number of them would come over in a dinghy and pull it back across the river and take over more troops. And that's how we operated. And they went back again the same way.
And did that go on right through your time there?
Right through my time there. And I'm sure it continued after I left as well.
Yeah.
And to this very day, it's the same.
Yeah. That was really a hot spot, wasn't it? Of all the troubles at the time, you know, that it was very explosive, and it was very you were always on alert. You were always finding it difficult, I would imagine, to maintain peace.
Yeah, well, there was no really. Any writ of law and order in the place, except the occasional time that we would win and set up a checkpoint. I'd never known the authorities from the north to do checkpoints along that road, except the irregular ones that were set up on either side by the UVF and the IRA.
Yeah.
And they were intermittent.
Mm-hmm.